And I looked at the Prodigal Son, and I looked at this, and I thought, how on earth can I explain this overly familiar story? Prodigal Son, yeah, I know that one. Do you know what I mean? How can I take this story that we're over-familiar with and explain it in such a simple and creative way? But they told me that that's what they wanted to do, and I don't always do what they've... Because usually, I don't know if any of you have any experience, usually you get an email from a Christian union, they say, we want you to speak on this Bible passage, and we'd like you to say these three things about the Bible passage, and they give you a sermon. I always ignore that bit and just do what makes sense to me. And I thought, I don't know if I can change it that much that I changed the Bible passage. So I began to think about it, and as I began to think about it, I began to think about images, and I'm quite a visual thinker. And I thought about... I began to think about Veruca. And what we're going to do this morning in the sermon is we're going to look at some pictures and we're going to go and learn about this story afresh and think about what it's saying to us. I preach most Sundays, and as I prepared this sermon, as I've delivered this sermon now in five or six different places, it's never been quite the same in any place. And it's the sermon that has done me the most good. Really has changed my life in all kinds of ways. My prayer and my hope is that you'll have that experience. As we think about Veruca Salt, like the prodigal son, who comes to the father and says to the father, Father, I know you're not dead yet, but I want my money. And I find that so upsetting. My father's in his 70s. He's had a bit of ill health. And you begin to think, oh gosh, he's not at death's door by any means, don't miss him. But all of a sudden you think, oh gosh, I wonder how much longer he's... And he's in Scotland, he's like a million miles away. I mean, how far away is that place? It's ridiculous. And you think, but you think, even my father, how could I go to him and say, Dad, I know you've probably got another 10 or 15 years in you. You know, 20 if you're going to do well, you know, that's good. But I'd like your cash now. Could you sell your house and can I just have my share of it? Unfortunately, I've got two brothers and a sister, so it's not going to go very far. But it's just horrible, isn't it? Horrible. That this son is so wrapped up in what he wants. I want it now. I want it now. I went for a walk with my daughter. This is Amy on the right, who's here today. And there's my other daughter, Summer, on the left. You notice I'm holding Summer's hand there. It's a funny thing that, because Summer's older. This was taken 4 or 5 years ago now. And Summer's severely autistic. And I'm so used to holding her hand, because you can't walk down the road with her without holding her hand. Because if she drops something, she just step out and get it. And in fact, we were on a walk yesterday, and she did just that. She went to get something out of the road. And so I always hold her hand wherever we go. And we're walking through these woods, and these are the Gruffalo Woods, if you've ever been to them in wherever it is, Brentwood, isn't it? And we were walking through these woods, and we had a beautiful day. And at this time, we were going through a really terrible period as a family, because Summer's behaviour was especially challenging. And my wife's not in this picture, because she was at home sleeping. And we walked through these woods, and we had a beautiful day. But obviously in the woods, there's no cars to run anyone over. So it was all safe, and it was all okay. And we'd actually had a real moment, a real kind of shaft of light from heaven moment of happiness and beautiful day. And I didn't have to tell her off, and it was lovely. And at the end of this day, we're walking back through the woods towards the car. And if this was a film, the music would have started playing and the birds would have started tweeting. And it would have been and the light would have shone on us. And someone looked at me and she said, Dad. And we stopped and we're holding hands and we're looking into each other's eyes. Dad. And I'm waiting for her to say, I love you. I was waiting for her to say, can we walk a bit longer? Or what a beautiful day. And she looked into my eyes and the imaginary music was playing. And she said to me, Dad, are there any biscuits left? Biscuits left. Now, I'm her loving father. I delight in giving my children biscuits. I really do. I'm a bit like a grandma in that respect. I love giving my children biscuits. But if my daughter's relationship with me was based on, can I have another biscuit? Then that's desperate, isn't it? Desperate. Summer came with me to a church recently where I was giving this talk, and she decided Sunday school looked a bit scary. And she stayed and listened to the talk, and it was quite an interesting story to say when she was sat there. And I just wish she'd said to me, I love you, Dad. And she came up after the service, and she put her arms around me and she said, I do love you. And it was beautiful. And the reason I'm telling you this story is I wonder if this is what our relationship with God looks like. We tell the story of the prodigal son and we think it's about them lot out there. And I wonder if it's more about us than we realise. I wonder if lots of us only really talk to God when we want something. Are there any biscuits left, God? God, do you know that job I'm applying for? I could really do with getting it. God, do you know that my work shifts and they keep putting me on late? I don't like late, God. Could you fix it for me? Because God will fix it, right? And I wonder if we come to God like the prodigal, where we come and we say, I want it and I want it now. Do we treat God like a vending machine? You know those vending machines where you go and you look at that chocolate bar that you really want and you put them your money in and you put the number in and it puts it forward and it tips over and then it catches on something so it won't fall down. So you end up pounding the glass on the machine to try and get it to come down. Is this how we approach God? And we're laughing, aren't we? But some of us are laughing thinking, gosh, that is me. I am treating God like a vending machine. And I wonder if we are the prodigal and we've not realised it. And my prayer is that God's going to draw us back to loving him. The son leaves, that's the son leaving. Hope you enjoyed that picture. The son spends his money. I'm sure it didn't look like this. But it's quite a good visual representation. And we don't know how he spent his money. We do know this is how he dealt with it. It was quite interesting talking to a room full of students, actually, about this and throwing your money away. And I did say certain things to them that I might not repeat this morning. But it's interesting because you take students, and I know you've got some students, so you've got someone at university, and perhaps others of you do pray for them, because all of a sudden you give them this money, you give them their loan in a lump sum, and you've got these youngsters thinking, look at all this money I've got, it's brilliant, and we should pray for them. And I know a lot of churches now are doing money management courses with their students before they go to university, and it makes a lot of sense. So anyway, the son, he spends all his money, and this is how he ends up. I was talking with it's our ladies' fellowship, but we're a bit progressive, so we let men in, all right? So our ladies' fellowship, that includes men, about this picture. And dear old Betty, she was looking at this picture on the screen, and she looked at me and she said to me, why are there three pigs in that picture? Why are there three pigs in that picture? And some of you were looking at each other saying, there aren't three, are there? Betty's eyesight isn't the best. And as she looked at this picture, she saw three pigs when there were two and the son. And in that moment, I understood what the artist was trying to do when he painted this picture. The son is in such a desperate situation. He feeds the pigs and he looks at the pig food. And you think, that looks so good. I'd like some of that. And you can't imagine, can you, being in that kind of desperate, desperate situation where you want to eat the pig's food. One of the things that upsets me about some Christian preaching is the way we make it so complicated. And I've heard people preach on this, and they go on at length about, of course, if he was a good Jew, he wouldn't have eaten pork. And it must have been very upsetting for him, as a Jew, eating him and looking at this pork. And I'm like, so for the rest of us non-Jews, it wouldn't be upsetting then. And now sometimes we go off on all these biblical, well, I'm very knowledgeable about the Bible, you know. And we're not learning anything, are we, about real life? And I look at this son in this desperate situation, and I think about the mess that so many of us are in spiritually, when we come to God and we say, God, I want another chocolate biscuit and I want it now. So I think about the mess that the world's in, and the world is hankering after so many different things. And I think this is a picture of a lot of our friends. And I'd encourage you, as you pray for your friends who don't know Jesus yet, to remember this picture. Don't tell them that this is them, because they'll be upset, all right? Just to be clear. But use this as spiritual motivation, because so many people we know are lost and they're without God. We came to, we talked to our local primary school, and we ran something called a prayer space. And if you're not familiar with a prayer, do you know what prayer spaces are? Some of you are nodding. Oh, that saves me 5 minutes. That's good. And this was one of the prayer spaces. We ran them in our local primary school, and it was absolutely brilliant. And this was an activity called the friendship activity. There were luggage labels with words on, and what they had to do was they had to pick three words that described their friend. So this is Alana on the left here, and Carolina on the right, and you know I know their names, Tom, so I've got permission to show this, just in case anyone's going to come and be angry with me at the end. And Alana picked joyful to describe Carolina. And it was just such a wonderful moment. Then myself or whoever was guiding the activity would then say to the person who'd heard those three words, do you think that's true? Do you think that's true? Are you joyful? And in every instance, they would say, not at all. And there was one girl who I didn't photograph, because I only photographed people I knew who I knew I could get permission for. And one of her words was clever. And I said to her, do you feel clever? No. No. And so you then go back to the person who's picked clever and say, why do you say she's clever? Oh, she's clever because. And she gives the examples. And she understands algebra. And she can spell complicated words like dog. Well, you know, she's really clever. And I'm going back to this girl and said, so you sound really clever. And actually, some of the things she could do, I wasn't sure I could do. She really was clever. Do you believe you're clever? No. And this is what, I'm not even going to look at you. I'm not clever. I'm not worthy to look at you. And in the end, we went backwards and forwards a few times. I said, you know, I really want you, before you go, to understand that your friend is saying that one of the things she finds about you is that you are really clever. And in the end, she kind of looked at me and kind of said, I suppose. And I pray for her still. I don't know her name, but I pray for her still. And as I talked to her teacher on the way out, I just said, this young girl over here, she really can't understand she's clever. And the teacher's jaw dropped. So I cannot believe it. She's top of the class, but yet she's broken. She's broken. And I'm about to go into a rant about our education system. I'm holding back on that. And so just here, this young girl is broken. But God can fix her. God can fix her. This girl on the right is called, what was she called? I can't remember her name. I've written it down here somewhere. Never mind. She came in, and the lady that was running the prayer space with me for the week, we were talking about, wouldn't it have been brilliant if we'd have got some of the older children to run the prayer activities? And then this girl came in and said, could I run the friendship activity? And so she did. So all lunchtime, she sat there and she took people through the activity. And it was brilliant, because she did it like a child. So she kept saying, yeah, and you know, and in it, and things like that. Yeah, and it was a bit different. She was more fiercely evangelistic than I was. She started talking to her about someone about original sin. She didn't use that language, but she started talking about Adam and Eve, and I was like, oh, God, I'm going to get thrown out of the school. This is terrible. And it was brilliant the way that she, as someone who is broken too, and I'm not judging her, I think we're all broken. We all have issues, don't we? As someone who is broken came and saw the way that she could bring the light to some of the people around her. And I think that should so inspire us, because often we're in situations where you think, if only I could bring hope to these people. And I just don't know where to begin. And this girl somehow began to understand that there was hope. The Son understands there's hope. He says he came to his senses and he decided to go home. And he thinks to himself, I'll go to my father and I'll say, Father, I've sinned against heaven and you. It's one of those moments, any of us who've got children, as soon as they come to us and say something like, I've sinned against heaven and you, you know what's coming, don't you? Just smashed your car window or something like that. So he's coming back, and this is a good start, because he's saying, Dad, this is broken. Our relationship is broken. I've messed up. And then he thinks to himself, I will say to my father, I am not worthy to be called your son. Please take me as a servant. And every time I pause and I think about that, it breaks my heart. Because the son wants to go to his dad and say, Dad, I'm not worthy to know you. I'm not worthy to be your son. It's broken, Dad. And if my children came to me and said, Dad, I'm not worthy to be your child. Can I just serve you? That's horrible, isn't it? Horrible. Who has the right to declare it broken? The father. This is the son's attitude, where he's coming to the father saying, I don't know you, I'm not family with you anymore. It really has broken, it's really all gone wrong. As I think about my children, and Summer I told you about, and she's bitten me before now. And in those moments where she's bitten me, and I wanted to do also, and I understand how people batter their children. I do, I don't condone it, and I don't think it's good, but I do understand how people flip sometimes. She bit me. And in that moment she said, and my children do say to me, I wish I wasn't in your family, but you know they don't mean it. If they said it permanently, it's horrible, it's broken, it's broken. This is how the story might have ended, as he goes to the father and says, I've messed up, Dad, I've spent all your money, it's all gone. I know you spent a lifetime putting it all together, it's all gone, there's none left. The door, our father slams the door in his face. But it's not how the story ends. The Bible says the father runs towards him. We know that the father had servants. We know that the father was very important. We know that the father was probably older. And one of the things that I do, I'm in my mid-40s. I know I don't look it. I know a young, strapping man like me. And whenever we're running late for school, my wife and I will take my daughter to school together. And whenever we're running late for school, I always say to Tracy, are you going to run? And she says, yeah. And I say, you can go by yourself. Because I don't run anywhere, because I don't want to have a heart attack. And I like to think of this man as someone a bit like me, who's perhaps a little bit overweight, not too much, obviously. And he sees his son coming, and he starts to run. And I like to think he has to stop for a breather halfway. But his attitude is so much that he wants to get to his son that he doesn't think. And all the servants are looking at him and thinking, I've never seen him walk before, let alone run. When he wants something, I have to fetch it. What's he doing? What's got into him? And this man, regally dressed and so important, he's running to get to his son. And he's trying to get there. And when he gets to his son, and his son's doing the speech, and I'm not worthy, and I shouldn't know you, and I'm not good enough. And the father runs towards him, and he flings his arms around him. And even at the beginning of this service, you thought to yourself, I do treat God like a vending machine. That is me. That is how I treat him, and I feel so bad about it. I can never speak to him again. I need to come to the Father and say, I'm sorry I've treated you like a vending machine. He's going to beat me up. The Father longs to fling his arms around you as you turn back to him. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that wonderful? And some of you really need to hear that this morning, because some of you have a relationship with God that is based on you being his servant. And you are frightened that he's going to beat you when he does things wrong. And God wants to fling his arms around you and welcome you and say, you are my child and I love you. Came across this picture that is absolutely beautiful, Love That Lifts a Child by Christy Valiant. I need to read out her name because that's the copyright deal I've done with her to show her picture. And this is what she had to say about her picture. Oh. What inspired me most from this parable was the father's loving heart. The shadow represents the father's view that his son will always be his little child. Even when the son basically said, I will wish you were dead and I had your money. The father handed the money over without bitterness. In that culture of that day, the son should have been disinherited or even stoned. A father who loves his son that much had to have high hopes for that boy. Did he pray for his baby son? Did he watch his son's heart grow harder through the years? Did his own heart mourn for those younger days when the rebellious son finally took some steps back towards his father? Did the father run to meet him and lift him in the air with such overflowing joy that he couldn't contain himself? Yes. Yes, he did. And it's just such a wonderful picture. I remember coming across this and I was just mesmerized by it. And you can see the son and he's a mess and the father kind of scooping him up and giving him a big hug. And the shadow. Jesus was baptized. You remember that, right? I mean, I know you weren't there, but you remember reading about it. And what did God say to him? You are my beloved son. With you I am well pleased. What had Jesus done before that? How many people had he healed? How many sermons had he preached? Anyone? None that we know of, and that's a good answer. I'm not saying there was nothing, but before he does anything, Jesus says to him, God the Father says to him, you are my son, and with you I am well pleased. And when we do stuff for God, we do stuff for God because we love him, not to get him to love us. Does that make sense? When I do stuff for God, it's not so I think he will like me a bit more. It's because he loved me so much in the first place. And I can't help myself but love him back and serve him. And I love the way that this picture reminds us that we are God's children. Love this picture of the robe being bought and the sandals and all that sort of thing. And I don't know if you can see that working, that thing. Oh, it is working. Well, it's not showing up on the screen. Up there on the right, the character in the middle is holding a ring. I don't know if you can see that. And the father says, bring the robe and bring the sandals. I want all the new clothes for my son. And it's brilliant. This wonderful moment of the son is coming thinking he's going to be a servant. And he ends up dressed in this beautiful, rich way. And I like to think that the artist was painting the older brother there with that ring. And he's kind of grabbed the ring off the tray. And I know this isn't how it works in the Bible story. But he's grabbed the ring off the tray and said to the father, what, you give him a ring as well? What are you doing? And you're killing the fattened calf? You didn't even give me a goat. I laugh. Sometimes the Bible makes me laugh so much. Can you imagine going to your father or someone you care about? You didn't give me a goat! And they kill the fattened calf. And the fattened calf dies in celebration. And as I read this and I was thinking about this, I thought, well, who's the fattened calf? And I'm not overanalyzing the parable. But the fattened calf is Jesus, isn't it? Jesus who dies in our place that we might have freedom to come to the Father. And this story doesn't end well for the fattened calf, but it ends well for the prodigals who are returning home. The older brother was furious. Furious. You didn't even give me a goat. He'd had his inheritance too, so he'd had more than a goat. And one of the things that dawned on me is this parable shouldn't be called the prodigal son. It should be called the prodigal sons. Sons. Because you've got two sons who've drifted from the father in different ways. One went and spent all the money and had fun. The other one decided that he would earn the father's approval. And actually, the father, if you'll notice when you read it, goes to the older son as well. He runs to meet him too. And so whichever you associate with this morning, the father runs to you too. Love this picture. I first came across this picture by Rembrandt a few years ago when my leadership team in my church sent me on a retreat. I was burning out. And I sat in this room and the person running the retreat said, we're going to look at this picture of the prodigal son. I thought, that'd be nice. And they said, we're going to spend half an hour in silence looking at it. I was ready to check out at that point. I wanted to get out of that room because I'm a fidget. I can't sit still. And I looked at this room and I think I spent the first 10 minutes thinking, oh no, I didn't send that email, or I should have done that, or I should have run that person. And it was a bit like that. And then I looked at this a bit longer and I looked at his feet and I looked at how desperate, and you've got the one sandal's fallen off and the other one's in pieces and about to fall off. And as I looked at that picture, I thought, that's me. That's me. And I'm here as the church leader, whose church has grown so rapidly that we can't keep up with it. It really was an amazing miracle of what God did, not what I did. It really was a fantastic story. And I was so frazzled because this church had grown in a way that we couldn't cope with the growth. And I'm just like, God, I'm dying. And God said to me in that moment, yeah, but you're my son and you're broken. But I can fix you. But the fixing requires me to realise that he's the father and I'm the son. I need to let go of any expertise or cleverness I think I have and come to him as the son and receive from him afresh. My current church, in case you think I'm boasting about the church that's grown, my current church has shrunk. And I find that really disappointing because I like to be successful at what I do. And one of the things we did a year or two ago, we came to the point where we believe that God was challenging us as a church to repent. The reason our church is called Orchard Baptist Church, everyone wants to call it Orchard Road, the reason it's called Orchard Baptist Church is there was a vision. And the vision was, we'll call our church Orchard Baptist Church. Beer Church is our area in Colchester. And then when we plant more churches, we'll plant Orchard Baptist Church over here, an Orchard Baptist Church. And the Orchard Baptist Church was a brand. And we were going to create these Orchard Baptist churches everywhere. I don't think we quite get down this far, but you never know. Orchard Baptist Church, everywhere. And I came to my leadership team, some of whom were involved in that decision, and said, I really don't think that decision was of God. And they looked at me and said, oh, yes, it was, I remember. Can't talk about that. And in the end, we talked around it, and it took us 3 or 4 months to talk around it. And they came to the point where saying, actually, it was on God's heart that we planted churches, but we made it about us. And from that moment, the church got smaller and smaller. And we repented of that and we turned away from God. And from that moment, the church started to grow again. Not because of our cleverness, not our evangelistic strategy is really clever, I can explain it to you. It hasn't brought anyone in, but God has brought people in. We had a Muslim wander into our church. You could tell he wasn't a Christian because he arrived for the service at 12:30. And he just said, I've come to your church. Brilliant. It's not me being clever. It was us saying to God, this is your church and we're letting go of the things that we're holding on to. Like the Jenga bricks we started with. Jesus, You're trying to build your church, and I wonder if we're getting in your way. And the father says, we have to celebrate this happy day. Your brother was dead, now he's come back to life. He was lost, but now he's found. And as we said, this prodigal may not be them lot out there. This prodigal may be us lot in here. And I came to the realization that I was a prodigal a year and a half ago. And that I'm a prayer prodigal. Prayer prodigal. Because I only talked to God when I wanted something. God, do you know this sermon I've got to deliver on Sunday? I'd like your input. Not too much, because I've got my own ideas. I'm a prayer prodigal. And I've come back to my father. And I said, Father, I've come before you as a servant for too long. When I'm your child. So God, I pray that you'd help us to realize that we are your children and that you love us. And as this son returned to you, I pray that you would help us to realize that we too this morning can return to you. We can come back to you where you are and you will accept us. It doesn't matter what we've done, no matter where we are, you can turn things around. We come to you in our brokenness and you fix us when we let go. And when we let you lead us forward. Amen. We're going to sing our closing song, which is called When the Music Fades. And I don't know how familiar with this song you are. It's a song that the chorus says, we're coming back to the heart of worship and it's all about you. And it's usually a song you'd sing at the beginning of a service, isn't it? And we started using it at the end occasionally. Because to me, this is a song of repentance. This is a song... I'm coming back to the heart of worship. And if you think worship is what we do in this building, then you're mistaken. This is part of our worship, but the rest of our worship involves what we get up to every day. The heart of our worship, the heart of how we live our lives, the heart of how this church is built, the heart of what goes on in our community is our worship to Jesus. And I'm coming back to the heart of worship and realizing it's not about me. It's not about church organization. It's about God. Let's stand and make this our prayer to Jesus.